This KFK podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. There's only one Greeley, one team like the UNC Bears, and one bank who cheers as loud as you do. Bank of Colorado, proud partner of UNC Athletics, member FDIC.
News story.
I don't know if this is the kind of hard-hitting news you're used to.
Got some good news and I got some bad news.
Now this could be the big story of the summer. Network is going to be wanting plenty of coverage.
What do you mean, silly? I mean, that's real news.
All right, we talked about the Protect College Sports Act. It's a huge deal, Mike. It's causing a lot of division amongst college football leaders. The goal is to bring it all together, of course, but we talked about this earlier. Cantwell accused the Big Ten and the SEC of bullying other conference leaders into going along with them. Well, the Big 12 and the SEC fought back. They said during the 30-minute call provided to the Big Ten and SEC, chancellors and presidents, Senator Cruz and Cantwell spoke for much of the discussion, leaving limited time for institutional feedback. Nevertheless, both groups of university leaders identified positive elements of the legislation and were encouraged to provide recommended changes and priority issues. Those recommendations and priorities were submitted shortly thereafter. They're kind of firing back, essentially saying we're not doing anything that Cantwell's accusing us of doing. In fact, they're not really giving us enough time to get everything out we want to get. Ross Dellinger posts, here's another interesting nugget on this bill. He posted clarification on a form, full text from this version, of about the coach's salary. The first $500,000 of a coach's salary can be paid using public money, but every dollar above $500,000 must be paid through athletic revenue and donations. That's a new amendment, or that's an amendment that they're trying to get here, basically. Is applies to departments generating $80 million in revenue. It requires schools to use only athletic revenue donations to compensate coaches earning at least $500,000. That will be interesting to see how that one breaks down as well. On the college football stuff, they're still fighting about the 2014 playoff, too. Heather Dinich of ESPN posted that leaders of the college football playoff took a deeper dive into conversations about a 2014 field at a meeting Wednesday in Denver. But there are still more questions than answers about the logistics of what expanded field would look like if it began in 2027. Rick Clark, executive director, told ESPN, quote, "We did have some discussion about 16 teams, but I will say that the majority of the discussion was about 24. I think 16 is, from some of the operational elements, we probably have more answers for 16 because it's a bit closer to 12. Simple math. And what we're doing now. So that drove the discussion more to 24 because it's so different and there's so many other variables that we have to consider. They didn't put any dates on paper to see how a 2014 field would play out on the 27 calendar. He said college football playoff media consultants attended the meeting, but they didn't actually get into the numbers as far as revenues go. So the question, the biggest question yet to be answered right now is whether having a 2014 playoff would generate enough compensation for the loss of revenue from their conference championship games, which if you do a 2014 playoff, those would likely be eliminated. You can imagine why it's like this one's kind of split down the middle. There are several conferences that don't want to remove their conference championship games. If that means doing a 2014 playoff is going to make you have to eliminate your conference championship game, then I don't think a lot of teams are going to want to do it. I'm more of the NFL mindset here, Mike. I'm saying it right now. I don't hate, but I think the champion of your conference should be the one that won the season. I don't think messing with an extra week for a championship weekend is the end all be all.
Yeah, and they used to do this. I remember one year the Pac-12 had three champions, because they all tied each other.
Well, then you figure out your tiebreakers. And if it has to go down to 10 bullet points and it has to get to number 10, and I don't care.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Go back to what it was before we had
just do
all these conference championships.
Just copy the NFL's format, because they don't have ties. Just copy the NFL's format. What is their tie-breaking procedure? Let's see. NFL division tie-breaking rules. Head-to-head. So if they have a tied record, you go head-to-head. Best one-loss tied percentage in games between the clubs. Then you go division record. Well, that would already be there. Best record in games within the division. Three would be common games. Best record in common games. Number four, conference record. Best record in conference games. Eh. Yeah, you go to like overall record or something. You know, then that gets too complicated because some have cupcake non-conference schedules, but that would be a difficult one. Strength of victory or schedule based on opponent. Ooh, that'd be good for the gamblers of the overs. If you go with strength of victory, you're going to motivate teams to want to score a few more points late in the game. Combined ranking, points, touchdowns. Ranking and points scored, allowed, net points. Number seven is final, coin toss. I have no problem if it gets to a coin toss. If they're flat out tied. So no, I definitely don't want to do, we got three champs, so that would just make everything complicated.
Yeah, that's really stupid. The NFL does it perfectly. I think their playoff rules are a little different than their division champion rules. But still, the NFL division champion rules seems to make sense.
Eastside Chris says, what do you do with the conferences that have two divisions?
Division A versus Division B. Or just take the top two.
Wait, you're going to have them play each other in a championship game? Now, how many of them have to deal with that?
Pac-12 used to have to deal with that. Then they got rid of it.
Didn't they get rid of all that? Do we still have that?
The Big Ten has that. They have like the west side and the east side. But I think that's stupid.
No, get rid of it. Just get rid of that. Wash that away. You just go best record, and then you go best win-loss total against each other, and then against common opponents, which they will certainly have that. And then you go score, I suppose. I have no problem if it gets to... If we're going to add... Even if we don't add any more playoff weekends... The fact that this thing goes so deep into January is not a good thing. So eliminating conference championship weekend, I really have no issue with it. Faith says there are a few that have two divisions.
I think the SEC is one of them.
Who are the ones that have the two divisions? Is the Mountain West still has? I guess the Mountain West still does? Or they did? I just think you eliminate that. And if you have too many teams in your conference, that's your issue for putting too many teams in your conference. This is going to get interesting. I don't know if any of this stuff's actually going to pass. Or if it does pass, the Big Ten and the SEC walk. I think we're leading to that more and more. Yeah, Faith says the SEC does. Okay. So just get rid of it. Just get rid of it. I don't need to see it. No, get rid of the division within the division. Or the division in the conferences. Just eliminate it. Or pit up your top team versus that top team. Don't have them play. Just compare records and such. If you want this to be like a semi-pro NFL model, then start copying what the NFL does right. You might as well. Still going to be complicated to do all that, but you might as well do it. First Advantage text line 888-530-0043. My prediction in all this, Mike, I just don't see there's a lot of little issues here in this bill that I don't see a lot of teams going for. Do you think the power conferences are going to go for that, for what Ross Dellinger's posting about the coach pay? You know, that applies to departments generating 80-plus million in revenue. So you're punishing the big schools. It requires schools to use only athletic revenue donations to compensate coaches' earnings of at least $500,000. And Dellinger went on to clarify that the first $500,000 of a coach's salary can be paid using public money, but every dollar above $500,000 must be paid through athletic revenue and donations. So that would mean you essentially have to go out and earn money to give to a coach if you're paying him more than $500,000. You think Power Four conferences are going to go for that? I wouldn't imagine so. And we already know a sticking point with players is going to be the fact that they want to say NIL dollars should be incorporated into your payroll. They're not going to go for that either, because that's what they use to circumvent that. And that's not going to, and if you're capping, the whole reason we got into this mess is players wanted to make money. They wanted to earn as much as they possibly could during their time in college. They're not going to go for that either. And I don't think a lot of Power Four conferences are going to go for that, because that's what they use right now. Because they're always over that number. They're using NIL. There's ways they should be doing it, but I still don't know how you regulate it, Mike. And I just think the bottom line is you got to get them to be employees. It's the only way you're going to fix anything.
That'll fix it. But right now, it should be either you have an NIL deal or you get money from the school.
And some would argue, man, you're giving them a scholarship. You're giving them payroll. Yeah, some value it. You're giving them payroll, and you're giving them extra NIL dollars.
And they have a food stipend that they can use. I don't know if they got rid of that, but they used to have that.
I'm just playing devil's advocate with you on the scholarship thing, because I am one of those guys that's like, most of these big-time players don't necessarily care about the scholarship.
Yeah, I think it's stupid.
Again, different rules for different teams and different conferences, though. It's just different.
You need to go back to the 90s when you had University of Miami football players in a documentary admitting that some of them sold drugs. Some of them stole things on the weekend because they couldn't, like, afford anything.
Well, we talked about this on Monday. Like, remember when kids were getting busted for putting cream cheese on a bagel? Or that story I told you where there's a guy that supports a local school in the area and saw that there were some recruits with a coach at a sandwich shop and got up and paid for everybody's meal and walked out. Coach had to chase him down and say, hey, man, no, here's your money. Take that back. You can't do that.
Yeah,
that was ridiculous.
That's very ridiculous. Why can't you, out of the kindness of your heart? There's a difference between very big, large school and the University of Northern Colorado. Like, very big, large school, I can kind of understand. But still, back in the 90s and before that, they weren't getting any compensation. They were going to school to be poor and play football.
Yeah. It was just, they fought it for so long, and then it bounced back and hit him in the face. I'm not. Do you think this bill passes? Do you think
not
it gets through?
Not in its current form.
No.
And now
you got Cantwell calling names and stuff, like saying they're bullying, Big Ten and SEC are bullying. We all know that. Putting it out there into the world, I'm not sure is going to do you any favors with the SEC and the Big Ten. Ross Dellinger writes that some might view the absence of the Big Ten and SEC support as a positive. Cantwell said, what we did today is say we're not going to let the most powerful and richest conferences dictate to the rest of America what's going to happen to 500,000 athletes. She's not wrong. But are they necessarily wrong? They built two massive empires. And now you got senators coming in saying, no, you got to spread the wealth. You got to share that.
My thought is if the Big Ten and the SEC move and become their own thing, there are a lot of people who are not going to watch your schools. Because there are more people who are fans of all the other schools watching TV than there are of just the Big 12, the Big Pac, and the SEC.
And how would they do it? Because it would be a massive overhaul. If they split away, what does that mean for the rest of their schools? You've already heard competing athletic directors outside of those two conferences say, fine, we won't play them. And they got to take all their schools with them. So they're not going to our track and field meets. They're not wrestling against us. They're not doing any of those other sports against us. They're not going to be allowed to participate in March Madness, which is the NCAA's.
And I love that. If you want to be your own thing, be your own thing. Now, that to me, that will hurt the March Madness a lot more than it will football.
Well, and it'll hurt those two power conferences a lot more. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
what,
if they don't have March Madness, they got their little semi tournament going on. That's
yeah,
not...
they've got the NFL and then the NBA version of college, and then they're gonna have like everything's just gonna be a little mini league. It's not gonna be as successful. You're not gonna get softball on TV.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how it's gonna work, but that just seems like somebody's gonna have to budge here. And if the Big 12 and if the Big 10 and the SEC truly think they can branch out and just do their own thing, then I guess like some ADs have already said, good luck.
Punish him.
Go do it then. If you're not going to play nice with us, then we're going to do our own thing.
And look, you know how much of a fan I am of the University of Washington. I don't think they should split apart. I think there should be a happy medium. And I haven't worked on it, and I apologize.
Well, I don't think your suggestions
are all great.
Well, your suggestion to fix gambling was, hey, make it so they can't do that. I'm like, they did. The NCAA said you couldn't gamble.
Yeah, but I need to come up with the 11 or 12 board members
matter.
Who there would be a player advocate, at least one. There would be advocates for each level of school.
It doesn't matter. You can have all those people you want. They can all come together and make a decision. And a judge can still have the power to come in and say, yeah, no, that's not right because this guy's claiming he has this. I mean, I get what you're saying. But on the gambling thing, that's what the NCAA did. They have that as a rule. You cannot gamble. You cannot gamble on your own team. If you do so, you could be kicked out of college sports.
I feel like
Sorsby won, but he lost at the end because of what Texas Tech was ultimately going to have to go through to deal with this. And so they came to an agreement. That agreement probably was more or less, hey, keep your NIL money. Don't sue us. Leave us alone. Sorsby officially dropped his lawsuit, and he's...
with prejudice.
Yeah, and he's out. And now he'll be in the NFL supplemental draft. But that's not, none of this was ideal for anybody involved. The fact that it got to this point, the fact that it got to the Big 12 teaming up to go against one of their partners, that's not what the Big 12 wants. And now Texas Tech is kind of reversing course and saying, hey, he's never going to play anyway. And now they're putting all their focus on the Big 10 and the SEC and what they should be doing to try to come together to help this bill move forward. I don't see how this is. I mean, the legislation for all of this still needs to be adopted by the House representatives, whose leaders, both from the SEC footprint of Louisiana, Mike Johnson and Steve Scalise, have expressed opposition to some of the bill's concepts. At the White House, U.S. President Donald Trump released a statement earlier this month supportive of the bill, but encouraging lawmakers to find a compromise that both chambers can support. There's just a lot in here. And this is one of my points I made a couple weeks ago in the whole minute, was they're trying to tackle every issue in college sports with one bill. It's too much to swallow. In order to fix this, you have to prioritize. Like, is a coach's salary the biggest issue plaguing college sports? No. I would even argue that conference realignment isn't the biggest issue in college sports. The biggest issue is mixed in with NIL and transfer portal. That is the biggest issue in college sports.
And you need rules for that.
You have to get that regulated. Gambling would have been the number one. If that would have been allowed for Sorsby, that would have been priority number one. But since this whole thing fizzled, that to me has now kind of moved out of the limelight. because the NCAA kind of won, thanks to the Big 12. But that's also a problem. Conference power. Why could the NCAA not level sanctions against Texas Tech, but the Big 12 could? That's a problem. It's not the biggest problem, but that's a problem. It actually worked in the NCAA's favor, but the fact that it took the Big 12, a standalone conference, to come out and say, yeah, we're talking about sanctions. We're talking about Texas Tech not being able to compete for postseason play. They had to make that rule. The NCAA can't do anything. And that is a problem. So when you say there should be a board, I agree, but that's not the NCAA's. It's not like they haven't tried that. It's not like they aren't trying that route.
They just haven't talked to me.
Okay. So you put together a board. They say, gambling, bad, don't do it. Judge comes in and says, yeah, but he was addicted to gambling, so this is wrong.
That's a Texas judge. And I feel like anything that has to do with football should not be ruled in a Texas court or an Alabama court. It just feels wrong.
Well, it was a Texas situation. Here on the other, one more note on the gambling thing. I think Cincinnati does need to be pressed. Mike, they were alerted to Brendan Sorsby, and they have this piece of technology. Ed Lamb was telling us today, UNC has this too. They have a third-party technology operator that can tell if people are getting, I don't know how it happens, I don't know how it's possible, but they can tell if you're trying to gamble, if you're logging in on apps and stuff. Sorsby's activity alerted Cincinnati to that. And Cincinnati officials talked to Sorsby, and Sorsby told them he couldn't get in. He wasn't even allowed to place a bet because he couldn't get in. And that answer was good enough for them?
Yes, apparently.
He was trying to and couldn't get in. That should have been flagged.
Yeah, I was trying to sell drugs, but I couldn't find where all the people who wanted to buy them were.
Mm-hmm. They used a technology called Prohibit to monitor for impermissible betting by student athletes. So it was alerted that he was going to do this, and then he told them that he was locked out of it. The school questioned Sorsby, according to ESPN, the school questioned Sorsby after receiving the alert and was told by the quarterback that he was denied access to the site and had not placed any wagers. So wait, you tried to get in? Like, yeah, sure, you can't be penalized for something you didn't do, but you tried. That should have been the red flag to heavily monitor this situation. 28 minutes after the hour, Mike, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk a little bit about the Denver Broncos. They're done with mini camp. What's next? Sean Payton feels so confident in this team right now that he said, we don't need a final day of OTAs, which I have no OTAs, mini camp. I have no problem with that. Should the Broncos be considered a legitimate threat to win the Super Bowl this upcoming season? We'll be right back.
Avalanche and the Nuggets. What needs to change? Follow along with us on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
There's only one sound like the key tumbling the lock open for the first time. One feeling like finally seeing your place after you've emptied all the moving boxes. That moment when four walls and a roof become the home you've always wanted. If you're on the search for that special place, we're the community bank that'll help you get there. Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender.
Hi, this is Jesse Kurtz, executive producer and lead anchor of the Mountain West Network, and you're listening to The Whole Show on 1310 KFKA.
Well, Welcome back into the whole show, guys. I've been telling you about the Fort Collins Foxes. You got to check them out. They have great players, family fun atmosphere. Find schedule information. They have so many fun nights that they're doing. They had the mascot night the other night as a part of Mascot Day. Check out FortCollinsFoxes.com for team information. First Advantage text line is 888-530-0043. All right, takeaways from the Broncos mini camp from what, you know, several guys like Sean Keeler, who visits with us on a regular basis, Luca Evans, Denver Post guys. We talked about this yesterday, the biggest, not a takeaway, but a biggest storyline surrounding minicamp, obviously the Jonathan Cooper stuff, and then Bo Nix's ankle, and then everything in between. But one of the takeaways was, or at least what people are wanting to see is actually different, is Davis Webb. Davis Webb going to be the man in charge of this offense. How big of a difference is that really going to make? I mean, when we talk about Sean Payton and what he's done in his time as the Broncos head coach, Mike, it's only gotten better. It's only gotten better, but there were certainly issues with how his, and he's the offensive guy, right? It was the offense that was kind of the weak point last season. You know, defensively, kept him in games all the time to allow for those fourth quarter heroics. So what was it about Sean Payton's process that just wasn't working? Like, on a consistent level. Was it Bo Nix growing in as a quarterback? Was it Sean not getting stuff in fast enough? We saw a couple of clips where Bo Nix is urging Sean Payton to get the calls in faster. Seems like that's been an issue with the Broncos for years now. How much of a difference is that going to make? And how much of a difference do you actually think, like, how different will the offense look under Davis Webb? My first question, Mike, commitment to running the football. Is that going to be a thing? And J.K. Dobbins says, I'm not going to get hurt. I'm going to be the best running back in the league. Well, in order to do that, you got to have more carries. More carries, more susceptible to injuries. But that is the number one thing I want to see with Davis Webb. Bo Nix led the league last year in attempts. He had big numbers. He did. And you can't have that.
I mean, some of it was they were far behind in so many games.
So he's just launching it. Sure, I get that.
But then some of it was, oh, the Broncos and the Raiders are playing a close game. Let's run the ball five times and then throw the ball 20.
There was just so many times where you'd run the ball and get like 8 yards, and it'd be second and two. And the next two plays are incomplete passes, and you punt the ball. And this is why I've talked about Bo, where I have my reservations about him being a top five caliber quarterback. I don't think Sean Payton necessarily did anything to help him by throwing the ball as many times as he did. So what will Davis Webb really do? Luca Evans even notes, it has to be, the run game has to be better. Bo Nix led the NFL last year in passing attempts, as I mentioned. Also, he led the league last year in passing attempts of under 10 air yards, 432. He finished 27th in yards per attempt on such throws. That's why I say, like, that's just not good enough to run back, especially with this schedule coming up. If you really want, I'm not saying the Broncos can't be a number one contender, but I have to see a fairly significant change in how they approach the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, and if you don't have a good running game, what's the point of having a play-action fake?
Right. And if Bo, if there is legitimacy to any of this, there is legitimacy to the ankle stuff. He did have a surgery. He did have a cleanup procedure. One would argue that that might hinder your mobility, at least for the upcoming season. And it might be something that hinders his mobility for the rest of his career. You've seen quarterbacks that are running mobile quarterbacks at first, and suddenly things slow down for them enough where they're not settling for that quick, hey, let me just take off and grab 4 yards here. I'll be more patient in the pocket. Oh, I've got a 17-yard pass completion. You've seen several great quarterbacks do that over their careers.
Yeah, we had one of those, quote, great quarterbacks who used to be very fast and then suddenly was slow.
Talking about Russ.
Yeah, Bo's one of his big weapons is his running ability.
That was their...
That's dangerous.
When J.K. Dobbins went down, the best thing about their offense was when Bo Nix could create. When he would just take off and create something. And listen, we knew in college he was a mobile quarterback. I didn't necessarily think that was going to be the strength of an entire offense, was pretty much when Bo went through progression one and two and then had to bail out and move upfield. That was their most powerful part of their offense consistently. Now, obviously, with Jaylen Waddle, that is going to change things for everybody. But that's all the talk, too, is Jaylen Waddle. How much of a difference maker he's going to be. I think it's a big get, but that's why this upcoming season is so big for Bo and so big for Davis Webb. But I think the most important guy on this team, or at least important position group, is your running game, and it can only be important if you commit to running the ball. J.K. Dobbins, R.J. Harvey, your guy, Jonah Coleman, and Jaleel McLaughlin. That's going to be the thing I'm watching out for the most when we get into, we could say training camp, and we could say preseason, but game one, what does that commitment look like to the run game? Because Dobbins was a monster. He did a lot with little. But also, the concern there is giving him more of a workload might increase, obviously increases the chances of him getting hurt. That's when you're going to be leaning on R.J. Harvey, not just being a playmaker. He was a touchdown machine for this team. But can he be a guy that can run consistently? And then Jonah Coleman in his rookie year, how impactful can he be?
And another question, are they going to rely on the Jokic position?
Oh, you're just changing the name?
Yeah, because they're like five jokers.
We haven't heard much about that anymore. I don't think I've heard a lot of clips this camp season talking about a joker position.
Maybe Davis Webb is like, yeah, we saw those joker athletes who were supposed to be really good and they didn't really do much. Like, their best joker position was...
It was R.J. Harvey, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, like, you have to get Marvin Mims more involved. You have to keep the run game, and every now and then make that guy a joker. You have to get your tight ends involved. I mean, they're paid.
Priority one and two, running backs and tight end. I'm not going to argue with you if you say it should be the tight end game that's better. I mean, it should be Evan Engram that's better. They ran it back with their tight ends pretty much this year. And some people had some issues with that. Cortland Sutton had some issues with that. Doesn't want people calling out the tight end group. We got to see it better. It's got to be better. I'm telling you, Mike, if you really believe the Broncos are a contender, you cannot have an offense that sputters along until the fourth quarter against this monster schedule that you have. You can't have it. You got to find a way to, I'm not saying you're never going to punt. Apparently they have a guy that's lighting the world on fire with Jeremy Crawshaw, can just launch it. Great. I don't want to be excited about that. Now, with a good defense, it is kind of exciting, but I don't want that to be like a thing. I don't need this offense scoring 24 points in the first half. I just don't want a lot of that, you know, 5-3 and outs in the first half and what's not a three and out turns out to be, hey, on your second wave, you're punting. So offensively, they have to be better. And I think a lot of that is going to point to this Davis Webb move. Watch it closely. Because if they sputter, like if they're even similar to what they were last year, how long does Sean Payton let that go before he goes back to calling plays? That's going to be a fascinating one. 41 minutes after the hour. Yes, Michael. Go ahead.
I was going to say, do you think Davis Webb has a more vocabulary in his play calls?
From what I've read, I don't know that it's really going to be that much different from what Sean Payton's plan is. It's just going to be Davis Webb is the one making the decisions so that it's not Sean watching the play and then quickly looking down, figuring it out. It's Sean evaluating the play, and then Davis Webb is already... Everything I hear from at least college coaches is your OC is already planning out the next play before the current play finishes it.
So he doesn't need to go to Webb's dictionary.
Don't need to do
words.
That. Don't need to. We didn't need to pause for that. 42 minutes after the hour. Let's get the latest on the local sports flash.
Hi, I'm Kevin Lytle of the Fort Collins, Coloradoan, and you're listening to The Whole Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Okay, Mike, I got a quick question for you. AFC playoff teams that made it in last year. Broncos, Patriots, Jaguars, Steelers, Texans, Bills, and Chargers. Which one, if any, of those teams is not making the playoffs this upcoming season?
It is going to be between the Texicans and the Chargers.
Not the Steelers?
Oh, the Steelers, that's right. They have Aaron Rodgers, but I don't know how much he has left in the tank.
Okay, so reverse of that, I'm going to give you a handful of teams. Teams that didn't make the playoffs last year that will make the playoffs next year. Teams that were close. Indianapolis, Baltimore, and I'm going to throw Cincinnati in there because they turn it on, and Kansas City. Which one, if any, of those teams get in the playoffs? Colts, Ravens, Bengals, or Chiefs?
I'm not going to answer that.
No, you got to answer it. Just give me one. Just give me one. Go ahead. You know what your heart tells you. He's the most electrifying man in all of sports and entertainment.
The Bengals have some issues.
But they're really good offensively.
I think we have a disgruntled quarterback.
If Burrow can stay healthy. I don't know if he's disgruntled. I think he's just disappointed he keeps getting hurt.
I feel like this is another season where he's going to get hurt. So I'm going to say the Bengals are out of it.
Oh, really?
And this is the first year coach for Baltimore.
Yeah, with Mentor. Yeah.
So I'm going to say they're out of it.
Okay. Chiefs, you can't do it, can you?
Dude, the Chiefs. Who was the other one?
I threw the Colts in there because Daniel Jones was hurt, and then they did the Phillip Rivers thing.
It's going to be between the Colts and the Chiefs. The Chiefs had a good draft.
Is there more from that list? You can put more. You just have to be willing to take four out. If you want to go all four, you can take, but you got to take four out.
It's going to be between the Chiefs and the Colts.
Chiefs, Colts get in?
Yeah.
Who do they replace?
Who was in it last year?
Broncos, Patriots, Jags, Steelers, Texans, Bills, and Chargers.
Replace the Texicans and the Chargers.
Okay, the Texans, by the way. They're the Houston Texans, by the way, Mike. I don't know why.
Texican is funnier.
It's not. I don't understand what that means. What are you trying to go for there? What is that?
I don't know. It's just funny.
It's not funny. 49 minutes after the hour, we'll take a quick break, wrap up hour number two. Derbs, the dude down the hall, joins us. We switch gears. We do our review, and we got a new rule change that Micah hates, but it doesn't matter. We'll get to that coming up a little bit later on.
Want a free gift for Dad this Father's Day? Make sure he subscribes to the best podcasts in the state. Find KFKA Podcasts at Apple, Spotify, or 1310KFKA.com. We are Northern Colorado's voice. 103.1 at 1310 KFKA.
Hi, I'm Kevin Lytle of the Fort Collins, Coloradoan, and you're listening to The Whole Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
What he's saying is hip hip.
I think so. That's why I'm pointing to my hips.
That was good. All right, Michael, coming up next. Yes, it makes sense. Derbs and I already talked about it. It makes perfect sense.
None whatsoever.
Yes, it does. We're not copping out anymore. You can't have a limitless amount of starters. So we have decided to tighten how we do things here on the movie review.
Yeah, but we don't.
No.
We're not. We haven't watched all the movies.
It's a prediction game. It's like a game show. Prediction game. We'll explain the rules.
Stupid.
Coming.
Stupid
it's not rule. Stupid. You just don't understand how things work.
I do. I'm
no,
a genius.
You
voice
don't.
Of the generation.
Where's your football? Fix college football. Oh, just say don't do that. It's illegal. Little Giants review coming up next.
This KFK podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. There's only one Greeley, one team like the UNC Bears, and one bank who cheers as loud as you do. Bank of Colorado, proud partner of UNC Athletics, member FDIC.